12:30, can we set the whatever cleaning up, then gather here to have our Dhamma sharing. Richard, Nancy, okay. Are you ready? Never mind, the rest, just leave it. Afterwards, we can sort it out. Okay. Just relax yourself, get yourself seated, and maintain some form of sadha, virya, then attentiveness. Attentiveness is silent, attentive, that is sati. The moment you are attentive without thought, you already in sati. So when you are attentive, listening without thought, that is sati. That's why there is what they call the art of listening. When you listen without verbalization, without chattering, without reaction from your knowledge, from your memory, that is attentively listen. You just listen with your open mind. Then whatever you listen, you can absorb very clearly. Then if it's something not in accordance, you will also understand. But you will not prejudge. So Dhamma is about learning how to silence more and more, be more and more attentive. The moment you are attentive, you are already aware. So today, before we start the Dhamma sharing, we would like to once again thank the host, Brother Sia, Nancy, and family for co-organizing this wonderful house dana for us to have the condition to come and partake and do all this wholesomeness and together have this meaningful sharing. So we rejoice together. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we would like to thank all Kayamita who can make the time to attend. Oh, Brother Pamasuri is here. Brother Teo is back. Yeah, just open the gate. Come. So just in time, Okay. Yeah, come. Sadhu. Just before we start our second session, you can have your food first, but Masuri, Brother Tim can. You haven't taken, You can go and have your food first, don't worry. And you can listen from there. Okay. Like I mentioned just now, we would like to thank also all Kayamitas who can make time to come and partake in this wholesomeness and rejoice in all this wholesomeness. So, we will at the same time learn to develop more and more of this mind state that are very wholesome, which constitute virtue. Virtue is very important. Virtue is your goodness, your kindness, your gentleness, your whatever good mind state, they constitute virtue. So a person who can keep their precept has virtue, because you got no negativity. If you are a virtuous person, you don't have negative thought. That's why you cannot violate the precept. You cannot kill, you cannot harm, you cannot deceive, cheat, or commit sexual misconduct and all those things. And you cannot arise the inappropriate speeches that can hurt and harm people. Then you don't partake in intoxicant that will make your consciousness very low. And because of that, the Buddha said, if you keep your precept and cultivate virtue, precept and virtue is a source of happiness. They bring about a lot of happiness, a lot of joy to you. So you must learn how to develop this happiness and joy. That's why you sadhu. Sadhu is rejoicing with the wholesomeness of whatever that has been done, that you are able to come and witness them, so you rejoice. Like people's generosity, people's sincerity and faith to prepare all this for offering. All this will lead to a lot of wholesomeness. There is a lot of synergy, because for cultivators who understand, they not only rejoice, they will send their pure wish, and in return, all those who make this offering or help to bring about all this dana and offering, they will also receive. Just like the monk, you support them, they support you back in kind, in the form of their Dhamma understanding. They will rejoice, they will help you to invoke the pure wish, then they will send chanting blessing to you, then they will teach you the Dhamma. So in return, you receive spiritual wealth. So that's why Sila or virtue, the Buddha said, is not only the source of happiness, it is also the source of great spiritual wealth. Spiritual wealth are wealth that cannot be taken away, not like materialistic wealth that can disappear. Spiritual wealth, they are accumulated within your spiritual nature. And when you connect, they will support you all the way. Then when you keep your precept and virtue, you will have a lot of mental peace. That's why it's a source of peacefulness. The serene mind, the calm and tranquil mind, the mind that has little or no restlessness and problem. Because when you keep your precept, when you don't harm, you don't kill, you don't cheat, you don't deceive, you don't do all those wrong thing, you got less problem. You got less fear, less worry, less anxiety. You don't have to confront civil society's law like police case and all those things. And because of that, you can sleep well because you don't have to worry about people coming after you, taking revenge and all those things. So because of that, you are more peaceful. Otherwise, if you violate your precept, you got a lot of fear, a lot of worry, a lot of anxiety, then negative karma, when they take effect, it will condition you into a lot of suffering and misery. And because of that, your mind becomes restless. That's why there is no peace within, and you become heedless. But once you keep your precept, your mind become more peaceful, more calm. That's why it's a source of true peacefulness. So true peacefulness can bring about a lot of good mind state for you to develop meditation. That's why after sila, samadhi will come in. Then you develop samadhi, it will actually give rise to wisdom, which is panya. Just give me a minute. I see who called me. Sorry for the interruption. Yeah, because this one is one of the Kayana Mitas from the Tuesday class. That's why I knew it was something important with a message. Yeah? So it's regarding the appointment on Tuesday. Yeah? So it's okay. Yeah? So just now, where do I stop? Huh? I was talking about precept and virtue. And where were I? It's a source of peacefulness. Then you can meditate. Yeah? Now I recall. Yeah? So when you have sila, when you have peace of mind, your mind state is more conducive for you to meditate. And because of that, you can develop samadhi. Samadhi is actually composed of two noble evil path factor. Samadhi covers sati and samadhi. So when you train your mind to be more and more peaceful, more and more silent, the moment you are silent, you are in sati. And when sati stabilizes, it becomes samadhi. So sati and samadhi can allow you to see things as they are. That's why once you have sila, samadhi will follow. Then your mind can see things as they are to develop the wisdom. That's why the Buddha always summarize the Noble Eightfold Path into sila, samadhi, and panya. Panya is wisdom factor, leading to right view, right understanding. As I know, the Eightfold Path, first path factor is samadhi, right view, right understanding. So when you develop that right view, you straighten your view, then you will have right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, and all the right effort. And this is what morality is all about. Sila is all about developing virtue. Then after that, your samadhi, path factor, which is inclusive of sati, they will take to a new level. Because as you have more and more right view, you will be able to have better understanding. Then you will know how to meditate better. Then your sati will become more refined. Then it will lead to more understanding, more clarity of mind, more silent within. That's how you progress. So do not underestimate the importance of precept, sila. Without sila, very difficult to go into meditation, samadhi. And without samadhi, wisdom can never arise. So the whole of the teaching, you realize, is very simple. And they are all related and connected to your daily life. So, apart from sila, samadhi, and panya, you also need to develop another important understanding. The whole of the Buddha's teaching point towards only one thing before he passed away. He advised the monk to strive on with heedfulness. That's why he said, apamadena sampade, apamadena sampadeta. Strive on with heedfulness. The reason why you need to be heedful is because the Buddha make it very clear, if you are not heedful, if you are not aware to cultivate this meditation as taught by him, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, then your mind will become heedless because it lacks mindfulness. It lacks the ability to understand things. It lacks the ability to develop the spiritual understanding born of that spiritual faculty of sati leading to samadhi. So heedfulness is key to spiritual cultivation. So you have to understand what is heedfulness. To be heedful, the Buddha defined very clearly under Dhammapada verse 23. The constantly meditative, ever mindful, if you hold on to these two practices steadfastly, you will realize the supreme born free Nibbana, which is the enlightenment. So you must train your mind not only to be mindful, to be ever mindful. Means throughout the day, you must learn how to slow down your thinking, decondition your heedless thinking, through whatever skillful means that you have. Then learn to be silent more and more, so that you are more and more aware, more and more heedful, so that you can transform the way you live your life from a heedless living into a new way of heedful living. Heedless means you are totally not aware. Then when you are not aware, you can never be mindful. If you are not mindful, how can you be ever mindful? And if you don't have this ability to be ever mindful, you cannot cultivate the real Noble Eightfold Path meditation as taught by the Buddha. And it's as simple as that. That's why the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. If you don't have heedfulness, spiritually you are dead. So no amount of thought-based meditation can free you. So this is key. So you have to train. Then as you train yourself to have more and more of this mindfulness or silence, and when your mind is quiet, you realize you are very sensitive. You can be aware of many, many things. So today I will go deeper into mindfulness. The silent mind, without thought, can feel very clearly. Even when you want to feel something, the floor, if you are not silent, you cannot feel, where there is no sensitivity. Like just now, Sister Ingby was discussing with me how she do the lying down meditation. Then she realized that that statement is very true. If you are not silent, you cannot be sensitive. You cannot have mindfulness to feel. That's why when she's silent, she can feel all of the vibration, everything. Then she can even feel how the leg, as it develops that type of sensation and phenomena, then how the brain, certain part of it, also respond and activate it. Then you can see them connected. Yeah, that is the part responsible for that phenomena. That's why I say you understand yourself very clearly when you eat certain food, the taste bud taste, then which part of the brain is activated, you will know. Especially you take curry or whatever, or like asam laksa, the shin, you will know from which part. And how you sweat also, you will know. Then how you function as a human being inside. The moment you are heedless means you think a lot. And human beings' problem is they are so habitual in their heedlessness. The five mental hindrances are so powerful. That's why throughout the day, they arise this thought which is very active, very heedless, ceaselessly. You don't believe you check. You think a lot. Your thought proliferate, run far ahead of whatever you do, and you are not with the moment. You are not mindful at all. As you do things, you think. As you walk, you think. Even when you sleep, you also think. The subconscious movement is all over. But because you are heedless, you are never mindful, you cannot see all this. And you cannot understand. That's why you tend to have this type of what they call problem in life. Heedlessness lead to a lot of unnecessary problem and suffering. There is no clarity at all. Your mind is always restless, in constant fear, have a lot of worry, anxiety. Then you attach to many things. Everything you see, you hear, you smell, you taste, you tactile feel of things is to you like real. Then you grasp, you cling, you accumulate without knowing that these are all psychological memory that can bring about attachment leading to suffering and misery in the future. So as you develop this understanding, as you silence more and more, then when you are able to do it in your daily life, your life becomes very different. That's why I can now go deeper into it. If you don't believe me, when you are free, even when you are here, that's why I look outside. Because my mind is silent. All of the phenomena outside, the flow, the movement, the trees, the leaves, the branches, and even your human activity, and the vibration within nature and everything that is around the surrounding. You become very sensitive because you are silent without thought. But if I think a lot and preoccupy all the thinking, then I cannot be with those phenomena. Because the silence, that nature, that awareness, can be with anything that moves. Physical movement, they call it, your physical body's action and movement. Then nature's movement, all the flow within nature, can be the plants, the car, the vibration, everything that is within nature. That is nature's phenomena. Then even when everything is very silent, very still, the essence of mind can still perceive that stillness. Then the essence of mind can still perceive the mental phenomena. Mental phenomena are your mental movement, your moment of perception, moment of sankhara, activity of mind, moment of feeling upon contact, the moment of consciousness. All this, because you are silent, you can be with it, you can understand what is going on. Then you can see them very clearly. But if you are heedless, you never understand, you never know, because you cannot experience them. Things that you have no experience, you cannot develop understanding. That's why the heedless eye is if they. That's why if you don't train your mind to be heedful, to have more and more moments of mindfulness and silence, there is no way you can penetrate the Dhamma. You can go retreat, silence yourself, or use object of meditation to fix the mind, to go into concentration, to go into absorption. Then, because the setting is very conducive, you can become very calm, very peaceful. But these are conditioned state. These are not something that can actually transform you and change you. Because to transform and change, you need wisdom, you need understanding. All these are part and parcel of the conditioned mind. The byproduct of a calm mind means calmness meditation, samatha. You may label it as vipassana, where you slow everything down. You slow down your action, your movement, then you hardly think. Then you use your thought to labor and be with that thing. So that is at least better than heedless thinking. But this is a conditioned state because it's not natural. And that calmness that you develop is not the real meditation. It's just a conditioned state. And you cannot develop real wisdom because it's not a direct seeing through the silent mind. It's still thought-based. So it's still Dhamma knowledge in action. There is no real penetration of Dhamma and understanding. Just like I explained to Sister Ingby, I say when you're silent, there is no word. And the mind that is silent will awaken to phenomena. Then when it awakens, because it experiences and sees the truth, the reality, then it can relate to the Dhamma. Then it straight away understands what the Dhamma is, the true understanding, not the word, not the interpretation, not what the book says. The example I give her is, I say, like swimming. Not until the day you try, until you experience that buoyancy, the flotation, you will never understand what true buoyancy is, what swimming is. When you don't need the float, then you can float. Then you realize, hey, this is beautiful. What they say, my natural state of body is lighter than water. If I don't deludedly panic, I have faith and allow the body to sink. Then the buoyancy force flotation will push it up. Then the body will surface. Then to swim, I just move either my hand or my leg. Then swimming becomes very easy. I don't have to worry about me drowning or sinking. I don't have to struggle in the water. I can swim with understanding. Then I'm at peace. Then swimming becomes very graceful. No more splashing of water. No more panic movement. No more. So when you experience that buoyancy and flotation, it's just like your silent mind experience the true mind. So then you realize, hey, the true mind is already peaceful, still, silent, meditative. I don't have to do anything to reach that state, like swimming. And then what happened? Because you awaken to that state, you understand that that mind is your true mind. Then that true mind can see things as they are, without word, without conditioning. But human beings' problem is, you got a lot of memory, you got a lot of views and opinion and conditioning. Before you can silence, every moment of seeing, you interpret, react, and stir the mind. That's why you can never see things as they are. You can never understand truth. Then you link with the Dhamma. Oh, is this anicchang? Is this dukkang? Is this anatta? Then you got all the knowledge going in. That is not meditation. That is thought-based meditation, which is knowledge. And it cannot liberate your mind. So you have to trust yourself, understand that the true meditation is about sati. And when sati is developed and stabilized through puja, through bowing, through daily mindfulness, through the kaya nupasana, first three categories of practices. That's why after mind sweeping method, you decondition the heedless thinking, then you anchor it and stabilize it to a skillful mean, either anapanasati or any other of skillful means or method and technique that you are familiar with. Then you continue to develop the silence until the mindfulness becomes very stable. Then go into daily life, mindfulness of the four postures first. Then all action and all movement in between the four postures leading to sati sampajana. So if you do this, your mind will slow down. You don't slow down your action. Everything is still the same. You go into daily life, you still do everything the same way. But because you already heedful, more and more mindful and silent, that's why you are fully aware of whatever that is going on. And when you can stabilize that, that's why I say don't try to know. The moment you are in sati, you will know, like swimming. When you develop the training until you can float, you know what the flotation is already. It's no more theory. No. Then when you develop until your mind is already in sati, it's like any games or any activity that you are familiar with. Like your yoga, your qigong, or even your cooking, your badminton, table tennis. When you are very skillful, you are no longer like before, learn chun chun on. Skillful means what? Every movement, every action is very graceful. And you can do it like spontaneously, no thought behind on. It has become a part of you. You have trained it so well. And everything is within the moment. That's why everything becomes so graceful. That is trained. Then when you are in that state, you are in sati actually, you realize you don't think one. When you cook, people ask you, how come you can cook so well? Just cook. How come you know how much salt? Experience, understanding. Then where to get the ingredient, because you have the experience and you understand, and you can do it. Even playing any game, same. When you have the skill developed, you can actually decide how you want to play the game because you are so skillful, like badminton. You want to serve low, it will go low. You want baseline, it will go baseline. Then how you want to return, you can decide. Means you have complete understanding of the game and you can decide where to place the shuttlecock because you are so skillful. And you can move very fast, spontaneously. That's why it's very effective. Then you can decide where you want to send the shuttlecock. So your mind is the same. When you have trained, it listens to you. You want it to be silent, it's just silent. You want it to be peaceful, it will be peaceful. You want it to arise, to be aware, you will be aware. You want it to leave, it will leave. Then the mind is a tool for you to use to leave. It's not the other way around. The other way around, when you are heedless, the thought tells you a lot of things, condition you into a lot of views and opinion. then all these habitual tendency that you develop, the views and opinion that you develop through your conditioning, this is the one that drives you to live your life. That's why you become a slave to your own thought, to your own conditioning, to your own views and opinion, and you don't know how to live otherwise. That's why you become like very predictable, because you are being heedless. You have this habitual tendency of every time reacting and doing all these things all over again and again. That's why no amount of retreat can transform you. You go retreat, you can become more calm, more peaceful, and you think you have progressed. The moment you come out, you are in daily life, you have not trained yourself, you are never heedful. The heedlessness take over, and within 1 week, maximum 2 weeks, you are back to square one. Then you realize you still have this fear in you. You still have this heedlessness in you. You still have these evil roots in you. They are not rooted out as yet. And your habitual tendencies are still there, very strong. What you do is, you try to use your Dhamma knowledge to suppress them, control them. I don't want to get angry. Anger is an evil root. And this is what most people do. But the real cultivation is different. The moment you understand through the silence, you will see the delusion and the foolishness of living that type of heedless life. And the Buddha Dhamma like stand up to investigation, then you realize this is heedlessness. The two states of mind is so far apart. Just like I always explain, heedful living is so different, so beautiful. You have a lot of joy, a lot of happiness, a lot of peacefulness, a lot of silence, a lot of stillness. You can be with the moment without thought. Means no thought means no fear, no worry, no anxiety, no suffering, nothing, peaceful. And just live. Because you have understanding. Whereas the heedless people, they are so agitated throughout the day, so restless, think a lot with all the hindrance. The duality, sexual desire, ill will, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, the reaction of mind to all of sense experience, then they worry a lot. To the extent that they worry not only about themselves, their loved one, their property, their possession, everything is to them like there is no security. They worry about them, the physical body getting old, getting sick, and one day it may die. Then they worry about their, apart from their physical, which is health and all things, they will worry about their career, their relationship with people. Then they will also worry about all those life-related issues. So, you become like always chasing around, running around, trying to like firefighting every moment, every instant. So all these are the realities of life and existence. You worry about your career, your property, your wealth, your business, your spouse, your children, then later even your grandchildren. Then their health, their future. So all this actually can lead to a lot of suffering when you don't understand. And you cling and grasp where you think this human form and mind, which is what you think you are, is real. That's why when you perceive this as real, you will perceive your loved one as real and all those possessions you have as real. So when the mind is deluded by all this, it is never peaceful. That's why the heedless living is full of suffering, full of restlessness, full of doubt and problems. So heedlessness actually brings about a lot of suffering and problem. That's why heedlessness is a path to the dead. Spiritually you are dead. So to have the spiritual life, you must train your mind to be heedful, and that is key. And to train your mind to have heedfulness, we already have them in the blue book, you read through. So you only need to start from there. decondition the heedless thinking, combine metta, then anapanasati, then form posture, sati samadhi, then train your spiritual faculty through puja and a good religious routine. If you do this, sati will come, mindfulness will come, and you will become very different. And you will know how to meditate, and you will become a different person. It will transform you. This Dhamma understanding will transform you radically. Not only character-wise, personality-wise, understanding-wise, you become a completely different person. You will have noble understanding of life, noble evil power unfolding you. You will have right thought leading to right speech, right action, and the right way to live your life. Then your ability to use the four right effort to constantly purify your thought and your mind will be there. Then you will have mindfulness and heedfulness throughout the day, and it will accumulate to samadhi. That's why you continuously develop understanding and wisdom, and this is how the Dhamma can unfold. Okay, this is the important summary that I want to give you all today. At least something for you to take home. So any question or now we can open up for general question. You got any question? You can ask. Go. No problem. Oh yeah, he's supposed to start at 12:15. Chico. Yeah, go. Oh, 1:30 start. Oh, okay. So sadhu. I rejoice. Thanks for coming. Yeah, you all have to go. Yeah, sadhu. Don't worry. If you need to excuse yourself, you can go anytime. Because it's an informal gathering. There is no fixed rule. yes. Where is the wireless mic? To help out in the recording, Danny, don't mind. Otherwise, too soft. When we did the transcript, emptiness going to come out already. So last time, because I think one of the questions was from you at the back, because you didn't use the wireless mic, too soft. We can hear you in the actual talk, but not recorded. So I just put that dot, then bracket, because didn't use wireless mic. Too soft, but it's okay. So now you can ask.
On the development of the five spiritual faculties. Yeah. The second one, which is viriya.
Viriya, yes.
I was told once that during meditation, sometimes you find a lot of discomfort. At times, during meditation, you'll find this and that is terribly uncomfortable and very tough.
I know.
I was told that this spiritual faculty of effort,
it's not effort.
We have to grit our teeth and try to force it through. Oh. What is your comment on this?
Okay.
I mean, this is what I...
Yeah, very good. Oh, okay, good question. Because many people don't understand. That's how they get trapped. You see, this spiritual zeal, viriya, if you read the English translation, a lot of people get it wrong. Because it always translated as right effort. Nothing to do with effort. You know the Noble Eightfold Path? The path factor, right effort? What is the Pali word? Sama? Wayama. It's not viriya. Sama Wayama. That is right effort. Viriya is a spiritual zeal, spiritual energy, tenacity to walk this way. It's not effort. Effort is thought-based. The mind determined through right effort. Right effort is sama viyama, wayama. That's why it's under Noble Eightfold Path. And the Buddha talked about this is because this is thought-based. You have to start from thought-based. What is the first right effort? Right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen. Correct or not? That's why it's thought. Then right effort to prevent the arisen or the unarisen unwholesome thought from arising. That is the second right effort. Then the third one is a right effort to promote the virtue the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood that are still not in you. That's why more and more contentment, more and more gentleness, pleasantness, simplicity, honesty, gratitude, respect, all these are very wholesome. That's why you cultivate all the right thought, appropriate thought. Then the last right effort is right effort to refine upon and perfect all those virtues that you have started to develop. So these are effort, thought-based. When it comes to spiritual vocality, is virya. Virya is not vayama. Virya is spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity to walk this way, to follow the advice of the Buddha, to cultivate. How does virya come about? Virya is a spiritual zeal, spiritual tenacity, spiritual, you know what is zeal, is that? It's a driving force, it's an energy, it's not a thought, understand not? Your heart wants to do it because you know this is important. You see the importance of it. So when it comes to virya, you have to reflect and contemplate clearly into the Buddha Dharma, the teaching. That's why we chant the salutation to the Buddha. You have to develop understanding of who the Buddha is, how unique he is. From the Ittipeso Bhagava Arahang, the nine great virtue, we come to realize that the Buddha is the fully enlightened one, not only enlightened, and because he is the fully enlightened, he got nine great virtue. Such indeed is the blessed one, the worthy one, and the fully enlightened one. Blessed one, virtue and wisdom. He is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born during his time in the entire universe. He is above even the devas, the Brahma, and all those whatever being. Then we chant homage to thee, the blessed one, then the worthy one. Where he is the arahant, he is the fully enlightened, he is worthy of respect, reverential salutation, offering, hospitality, and all those things. So these are the great virtue that you have to come across. Then he is the teacher of mind and God. He can teach anybody. He is a guide incomparable. That's why all these are his great virtue. And to have such a great being to be your teacher and your guide, you will have a lot of faith and respect for him, gratitude towards him. That's why Sada become very strong. Then you come to the Dhamma. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo and all those things. Then you come to realize that this Dhamma is so unique, so special. No need to wait until death. Can be realized in the here and the now, each by the wise. And it will stand up to investigation. Then this is something that can awaken you, liberate you, make you enlightened, so that you can be free from all suffering. If you come to know that this Dhamma is so powerful and so fantastic, I don't know why are you waiting. When I came to know about this in 1971, I never turned back. Because this is so important to me. It not only involves this life, my entire existence, future life, all depend on this understanding. If I cannot have this understanding, then why do I want to come to this world? I come to this world to suffer for it. That's why I will have this spiritual zeal based on this understanding to go all out to cultivate this understanding, to develop this understanding, and to understand the Buddha Dharma, the essential Dharma, so that I can move. That's how the virya come out. And when the virya come out, you see the importance of meditation and the training of the mind to be mindful and heedful. You can never be sleepy. You will endure, you will persevere. Even whatever arise. Like the Buddha said, not until the... You remember, beneath the Bodhi tree before he became enlightened? Even until all the blood, everything dry up, he will not arise from the seat. Unless he develop enlightenment. That resolve, that determination. So all this is part and parcel of understanding. That's why Sabbasavak Sutta say, things that you need to endure, you need to endure. like bodily condition, sickness, disease, and all those things. When body is sick, do not allow your mind to be sick. When there is this sensation of itchiness, pain, or whatever, due to insect, you have to endure, where the condition is such. So all this is part and parcel of understanding the teaching. Then this virya become very strong. That it will drive you. That's why you determine to pay respect, to develop the spiritual understanding. Then you develop sati, stabilize it. Then you do all your puja, you chant all the salutation, you renew your precept, you develop understanding of the essential Dhamma, then you cultivate, you put it into practice. And that's how virya will actually transform you. So what people tell you, clench your teeth and all those things, they just get from the Dhamma book, because there are five ways to overcome unwholesome thought, understand not? Or when you have problem. What are the five ways? First one is to think of the direct opposite wholesome thought, so that when you have wholesome thought, you cannot think of negative thought. Like when you have anger, if you reverse it and read it, metta. When there is metta, when you wish yourself well and happy, you cannot have anger anymore, understand? Unless you attach and cling onto that thought. And then you are not be mindful. You only verbalize like parrot, understand? And then that anger is still there, understand? But if you really have this understanding that if I reflect and contemplate on the opposite wholesome thought, the negative thought cannot arise. But because of your delusion, you haven't rooted it out. Temporarily, it will, like, no more. But the moment you stop radiating metta, the memory will recall. So, and then you get angry again. You get unhappy again. That's why the Buddha knew you cannot do. So if you cannot do, then go to the second contemplation, the second way. The second way is the Buddha said, reflect and think of the consequence or danger holding on to this evil root of anger, fear, worry, anxiety in your mind. Because these are evil root, root of all evil. It will make you evil, especially your anger, your hatred. It will cause you to think very negatively. And from there, you are capable of being violent and all those things. So, do you want to live that type of life? Because your life, you have to decide. If I know it's an evil root, it makes me evil and bring about downfall in my life, negative karma, then I have to confront the fruit of it, the vipaka. I will never do it, understand? Because I treasure my life. I do not want to fall into negativity. I do not want to violate the precepts. I do not want to hold on to this evil root because it makes the form and mind evil. And an evil person is capable of a lot of negative things that violates the moral code of karma. And this will bring about downfall in your life. And like the Buddha said, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. If you don't take care of karma, your life will surely become miserable. So when you reflect on the consequence and danger of holding on to that wrong thought, you will determine to abandon it. All this, you can use thought. But the third way is the best. That is the meditative way. The Buddha said, you don't fight the anger. You don't fight the fear, the worry, the anxiety, the lust, the craving, the delusion. What you need to do is just silence your mind. Maintain awareness. Just aware. Then what happens? Everything will cease to be. Yeah, everything is conditionalizing. Anger was never there before you get angry. Fear was never there before you get fearful. And all those negativity, they are not inherent in your nature. Your original mind is silent, peacefulness, stillness, tranquility. There is no movement inside there. There is nothing, like Hui Ning say, 本来无一物, her children's alive. Originally, there was nothing. Where can the dust alive? If you don't have wrong view to stir your mind, to react and make yourself angry, fearful, miserable, that state will not arise. And anger is not you. Well, when anger arises and passes away and cease, you never die. So how can anger be you? Why do you want to worry about anger? You have to understand that they are not inherent in you. They are not you. But it has arisen in the form of mind. That's why mindfulness of citta, when the content of consciousness has anger, you must be aware that this has been conditioned into negativity. You are no longer in your original state of mind, of stillness and inner awareness. Your mind has stirred. Just like feeling when it arises. When feeling is no more pure feeling, means what? You have delusion. A yoniso manasikara. You don't have yoniso manasikara. You don't have wisdom at the moment of attention. Wise attention is not there. That's why feeling immediately becomes craving. And what is craving? Like and dislike, or pleasant and unpleasant feeling. So that's why under Vedana Nupasana, the Buddha said, when feeling has transformed into pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, you must be aware. Aware means what? So that you can trace the origination factor. How does the unarisen hindrance come to be? Sensual desire and ill will, pleasant and unpleasant feeling. So that you understand clearly how the unarisen hindrance come to be, the evil root come to be. Then when you silence your mind, you will come to know how it ceases to be. How the arisen hindrance and defilement, evil root, ceases to be. And that's how you meditate. Then you develop the wisdom. Then you can go to the fourth way. Well, the third way can only allow you to be peaceful, understand not? Then after that, you come out into life and society. You see again, well, your view is still wrong view, still got delusion, you have not straightened your view, you will react the same. You will still stir and become angry, fearful. That's how living being never change, never transform. So the third way is effective only temporarily. It's a temporary solution to restlessness of mind, to agitated state of mind, to all the negativity of mind. You cannot rely on this. That's why you have to move on to the fourth way. And the fourth way is Dhammanupassana. You trace the origination factor. Before anger arise or fear arise, it was not there. How does it come to be? That's why you have to develop mindfulness of Dhamma under the Dhammanupassana. Mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. Then you will come to realize all this negativity of mind state, they arise through sense or consciousness, either through one of the senses. Upon contact, when you see something, then due to your wrong view, you react and you get angry. Or you hear something abusive, or something that you don't like, then again you react. Or you hear some bad news, then you develop fear, worry, anxiety. So all this come about through your reaction of mind, born of your wrong view, conditioning. Then you realize this is how it come about. Then you continue to silence, then it ceases to be. Cease to be means what? If you don't give it any more meaning, if you don't feed it with any more thought energy, then all anger, if you just silent, aware, it will return to its original state, like swimming. Buoyancy, the original state, already buoyancy, it will return to that state, no panic. So the mind is the same, it becomes peaceful again. That's why next time you get angry, you just silent, relax. No need to do anything, then you won't happen. Then you realize the agitation, the anger, the movement inside here is slow down. Then suddenly, still, nothing. Then you realize, there is real meditation. I don't have to do anything, I just silent. That's why silence is the real meditation. The moment you're silent, you understand that all these are conditioned arising state. Never you. Because they are not permanent. They come and they go. And when it come and it go, you never die. That's why anger is never you. The aggregates of mind are never you. Feeling come and go, you never die. Perception come and go, you never die. Activity of mind, thought come and go, you never die. Consciousness come and go, you never die. So how come? You go and deludedly cling and say, feeling is me. Pain, pleasant, unpleasant feeling. Then you cling on to your loved one, the people you perceive. All this you hold on. Why? Because you cannot understand they are not you. To you, the form and mind like very real. Because you cannot see that the five aggregate of form and mind are empty. That's why the Buddha said they have this universal characteristics of impermanence. Because they are impermanent, they will lead to suffering. Where everything will change. No matter how pleasant the state, it will change. And when it changes, you cling and attach. Both sides, you will be caught. Suffering will be the result. That's why from impermanent, it will lead to suffering. Because there is this duality. And because it's impermanent, condition arising. It's never a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to and cling on to and say, this is me, this is I, like this body. You can never say, don't get old, don't get sick, and don't die. Because it doesn't belong to you. It's a condition arising state. Go the way of nature. It cannot remain the same. And this one is not your true nature. That's why this one, condition arising, karmically conditioned out for you to use. If you deludedly grasp and cling, suffering will arise. This is how you penetrate the Dhamma. This is how you see through the unreality of form and mind, like Heart Sutta. When Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, when he was cultivating the Prajna Paramita, means perfection of wisdom cultivation, he illuminated the five skanda and realize that they were all empty. Because through wisdom, he penetrated. Then he is no longer deluded. Then he passed beyond all suffering and reached the other shore. So all this, they are in the teaching, in the system. So when you can trace the origination factor, then you realize it's through one of the senses born of wrong view. Then the Buddha said, when you understand how it arises, how the unarisen hindrance come to be or evil root, then when you silent how the arisen cease to be, then you must know how to retrospectively reverse it. Means what? You have to straighten your view, reflect and contemplate. Why do I stir? How come I have got this wrong view? It comes from where? My conditioning, my belief system. All those things that I come to believe in, that make me like that, since young until now. But then you realize, if this is wrong view, what must I do? I must develop right view. How can I develop right view? Go back to the teaching. What did the Buddha mention? Three right view. Have you cultivated them? They are the spiritual law that governs life and existence. First one is law of karma. Because there are karmic conditioning behind. That's why if there are coming obstruction, it will obstruct you. You cannot go beyond. You have to ask for forgiveness. You have to ask for forgiveness. That's why in Mahayana, there is such thing as repentance. Asking for forgiveness. Even the Buddha's time. Tiroda, Yuachan, Kayena, Wachachatena. And all this. You ask for forgiveness from Triple Gem. But you should expand it to ask for forgiveness from all beings. Whether knowingly or unknowingly that your nature in the distant past until now has caused any coming negativity, suffering or misery, you have to do that. Otherwise the obstruction will be there. Then you know, through this nature's law of karma, you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. Then like the fifth of the five daily contemplation, all living beings, we are born of karma, heir to our karma conditions, supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. So when you understand this right view, what must you do? you must take care of karma. Then you realize that is how the advisor, the Buddha, come about. How to take care of karma? The Buddha said, keep your precept. Who violate precept? The people with evil root. Root of all evil, evil person. Then when you take care of precept, you can never do it if you are heedless. You have to train your mind to be mindful, to be heedful, to be ever mindful of your mental intention behind all your actions, speech and thought. That's why mindfulness come in, heedfulness come in. Then the four right effort come in. That's how Noble Eightfold Path can be understood. That's why this law of karma is very powerful. When you have that right view, you don't blame anybody. You don't like react to life anymore, because there are causes and conditions behind everything that arises, like the Buddha said. So you don't get angry with that person. You don't hate that person. Whatever they do to you, you tell yourself, very likely in the past, this nature of mine must have done this to people. That's why now there is condition. It has to confront all this. You reap what you sow. What you do to people come back to you. You become the victim now. So you must have the wisdom to accept them and at peace with them. Then act. Need to ask for forgiveness? Ask for forgiveness. Then tell yourself, you determine from now onward, I'm not going to repeat all this. I'm not going to allow this delusion to continue. I'm going to follow the advice of the Buddha. That's why I keep my precept. I forgive and I forget and I move. That's how you cultivate. Then after that, you go into the dependent origination. Dhamma nupassana. Chitta nupassana. Chitta niyama, the mind, order of the mind. The second spiritual law, the right view. And when you understand how your mind functions, then you realize you need wisdom. Otherwise, without wisdom, avijja paccaya sankhara, you will think a lot, you will become heedless. Because dependent or ignorant activity of mind arise. If I don't straighten my view, if I don't develop understanding, this ignorance will continue to condition me to be heedless, to think. That's why when you straighten your view, you have right view, you got less problem. You become more heedful, more mindful, you think less. That's why that link is weakened. Avijja paccaya sankhara is weakened. And that's how you actually transform. So to trace the origination factor is very easy. You know that it's from one of the senses, then it is due to your wrong view. So you develop right view. Right view is law of karma. Accept, need to ask or forgive, ask, then vow not to repeat, then invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to gain back your good life so that you can have the condition to cultivate again, to move, to progress along the path of Dhamma again. That's why as Dhamma Frank Kayamita, the Kayamita Fund is geared towards this, to help you all actually develop the parami and the merit and the invocation of all the wholesomeness that we have actually dedicated. It's for you to actually develop the causes and conditions to move. So when you have done that, you will have to reflect and contemplate on the essential Dhamma, to develop the clear understanding of all this important right view, for you to develop the wisdom to overcome your wrong view. So how do you straighten your view? Law of karma is one. Dependent origination is the second one. So you reflect and contemplate. How come every time I react? So my wrong view is sakkayaditti. I thought this was me. Then I believe there is a person who say bad things about me. That's why everything is like real. But when you penetrate the Dhamma and realize that they are all impermanent, condition arising, no reality, form and mind, form and mind, then you don't take it as something very personal. Then you know it's a natural condition arising entity that go through all this process. So form and mind arguing with form and mind, getting angry with another form and mind, developing fear through delusion, sakkayaditti, ignorance. So what is all this? So you reverse your understanding and learn how to develop more and more wisdom, not to do that. Then you tell yourself, if all these are impermanent condition arising, no reality, anicchang dukkhang anatta, then how can I develop the right view not to react? If I don't believe this is me, then it's no more problem, is it? Then whatever people say or do, form am I saying all those things? So you can accept what they do, say, or act, then you become peaceful. Means you have to learn to accept them for what they are, to see things as they are. You have to come to terms with the reality. They are just the way they are. You accept them for what they are. Means what? Deluded people will say deluded things. Angry people will say angry things. Selfish people will do selfish things. If they are just the way they are, then there is nobody to get angry, understand? Because you can accept. The moment you can accept means what? You no longer stir your mind. You no longer react. You no longer blame, because there is this law of karma. You can accept him completely. And when you can accept, means you are at peace, understand? No more anger, no more hatred. Then you realize that is a pretty good way to live life. Granted, this is right view. This is how you straighten your view. Then when you can straighten your view, then you realize, hey, the next time you see the person or hear or recall, there is no more delusion. Then you realize, hey, you don't react like before already. Then sometimes you see them doing all those things, you pity them, no? Out of compassion, you really love and metta. You say, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. You have followed Jesus' advice. Even then people crucify him, and people say, you're not angry with them. No, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. Because they don't understand the consequence. They are just doing it. So when you develop this type of wisdom, you can laugh, no? Then as you retain metta, he continues to scold you. Then you must have changed, understand? Otherwise, how can you do that? Then you say, it's okay. Thank you so much. Sorry for whatever happened in the distant past or whatever. I don't know the Dhamma that time. I really don't understand. I was really foolish. That's why I teased you, I disturbed you, I cheated you. But now I would like to ask for forgiveness. The moment you say that, he will look at you differently. Oh, okay lah, I think it's okay lah. That time I also got fault lah. Then you talk differently. But if you keep on blaming him and arguing with him, then you finish. He become violent, he whack you. So life is like that. When you trace the origination factor, you can retrospectively reverse it. And this is the best way. This is Dhamma. This is meditation. This is wisdom, understanding, seeing things as they are, not reacting. Be at peace, then correct your views, straighten your view. That's why listening to Dhamma, straightening one's view, is meritorious action. Understand? If you continue to straighten your view, you got more and more right view, means what? You are less and less ignorant. Then the first link, dependent origination, paticca-samuppada, avijja-paccaya-sankhara, weaken. Weaken means what? Less ignorant, less sankhara. What is sankhara? Mental activity, thinking, emotion, mental state. All this become less and less. That's how you become more and more mindful, more and more heedful. All those that are not worth thinking, you will not think. Just like the Buddha said, sabba asava sutta. Things that are not fit for attention, you will never pay attention anymore. Yeah, when you pay attention, what happens? The unarisen asava arise, defilement. The arisen become worse. Then why you want to think? That's why when you have this understanding, your mind is different. You liberate, you free. Then the fifth one, the Buddha said, this is where they take and tell Danny. The Buddha said, if the first four advice he has taught you also cannot help you, then there is nothing the Buddha can do for you. You have to fight it yourself. Then he said, with palate against the tongue against the palate, ngao jing a kan, then you determine to abandon that unwholesome thought. Means you must use your sheer mental strength, understand? Determination. And that is thought-based. Understand? Of course, it was one of the advice of the Buddha. But how did the advice come about? It is 4 things also you cannot do. You better don't come and see him. You go and do it yourself. Understand? That is what the 5th advice is all about. And this is what they advise you. What do you think? Yeah, that's why you ask that question. Very unbearable. So fuck it. Whatever mental state, whether bearable or unbearable, is decided by who? By the delusion up there. Understand? If you have wisdom, you will be at peace with everything. Understand? Then there is nothing unbearable. Understand? Unbearable because you are deluded. You have attachment to comfort, to good state. But you don't know how to realize it. Just like law of karma. If you want to have good life, take care of karma. Karma take care of your life. Finish. That's why live life in accordance. That's why do your duty and you will have good life. Beautiful life. If you don't do your duty, nature's law come ready, then only you complain. That is delusion. So, like the Buddha said, your life, you decide how you want to live. He already told you, Dhammapada verse 1 lead to suffering. Dhammapada verse 2 lead to happiness in life. So, pretty easy to choose there. If you want to have a happy life, what must you do? Train your mind, be heedful, and avoid Dhammapada verse 1. Your verse 1 is what? These are the twin words, the opening statement of Dhammapada. The Buddha said, your mind is your most important entity. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chi. Somebody is here. There's Yoni is here. So mind is chi. When mind arises, everything comes to be. So what must you do? The Buddha said, if you are heedless, you will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind, with a deluded mind, that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. If you do that, what happens? Suffering will follow you. Like the wheel that follow the hood. So this one, very clear. If you are heedless, you will develop the evil roots, and you will act, speak, and think heedlessly, with an unwholesome mind that has the evil root of greed, hatred, and delusion, that suffering will follow you. And most human beings are like that. They say they suffer a lot. Then, the opposite, complementary, second verse, Dhammapada, verse 2. Again, the Buddha said, your mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief, and mind is very important. That's why he said, you choose to take care of mind. Train your mind to be heedful, to be aware. And then when you act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, with a heedful mind, that is free of all the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Happiness will follow you, like your shadow that never leaves you. So life is pretty simple. You want to be happy? Avoid Dhammapada verse 1. Train your mind to be heedful. And develop all the wholesomeness, following Noble Eightfold Path, then happiness will follow you. Even when you keep your precept, when you have virtue, it's the source of happiness, it's already there. Then when you are happy, you will be peaceful. And because of that, it is a what they call spiritual wealth. Source of true spiritual wealth. It will bring about understanding, to understand the spiritual teaching. So this is how you have to develop the understanding. That's why investigate into all things. Don't listen to what people tell you. And get the essential Dhamma clearly understood. Virya is not effort. Virya is a spiritual tenacity, zeal, the force that drives you. That's why it's energy. Energy. It's not directed by the thought. Effort is thought-based. effort is what? One to do. The one thing is from the thought, the effort. Whereas spiritual zeal is a tenacity that moves you. There is no thought behind. It's wisdom behind another. They understand the importance of meditation. And there is no greed, no effort, no determination, no thought behind. It's just an understanding that sees the importance of this practice. When you see the importance, you somehow don't want to do, then it's your choice. Well, that is your life, your decision. Yeah. That's why virya is for you to see. Then, develop the spiritual zeal to walk. Okay? Okay, any more questions? That is a very good question, at least you all learn. And most of it is, I already explained before, the five ways to overcome unwholesome thought. But maybe the clan group haven't heard of this spiritual faculty of virya being explained in this way before. But I have explained in many of my sharing in the Tuesday class, Thursday class, and Sunday class. Yes. Use the mic, brother.
If it is virya through thought based, can it be clinging?
Okay. What do you think? What do you think? Because if you interpret virya wrongly, then it becomes thought based on itself. Virya itself cannot be thought based on itself. Virya is a spiritual faculty. How can it be thought based? That's not. Like sadha is the faith. It's a mental state. It's not a thought. When I have faith in the Buddha, I don't believe the Buddha. That faith comes from understanding. Understanding brings forth the faith. It's not blind faith. It's spiritual faculty. That's why it's a spiritual faith. So virya is a spiritual zeal. It's not a thought. But you interpret virya as effort, then it becomes a thought. That, of course, there is craving. Who make effort? There must be somebody there. Somebody make effort, want to cultivate, want to do this, want to do that. And that is the thought, active. So when there is no effort, means what? That's why Krishnamurti say, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. Wherever there is effort, there is no meditation. Well, meditation is just silent, nobody inside there. It's just an understanding, awakening. Not through a thought, not through a person. Okay? Any more questions? So at least the sharing is good, You can ask, and you have to ask so that you can clarify more things. Pass the mic to Eng Bi.
Radhe, from your green book, who am I? Who are you? What are you? At page 21, you mentioned that this form of mind is non-self. But no, not no self.
Yeah.
Not no self.
Yeah.
So maybe Radhe elaborate a bit. What is the difference between non-self and no-self?
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Radhe.
You see, it's just like people don't understand emptiness. What will they tell you? Everything is kong in Mandarin. Empty. So if everything is kong and empty, no need to talk about it. Understand? But life is not like that. Understand? The deep meaning of emptiness is, it doesn't mean there is nothingness. That's why non-self and no-self, they are very different. Non-self is, this one is not you. Understand? But there is a form and mind there, you know. No self means what? This one also don't have, no? Form and mind also don't have. Understand? No? But there is no. None is, this one exists, but it is not you. That's why the Buddha say, you are born of your karma, head of your karma, condition, supply, you are what you are because. Then who is that you? That one refers to form and mind. Understand? No? That's why that one exists. But that one is not you, that's why it's anatta. Understand? No? You can say that one enlightened, correct? We are connected to the wisdom, that one enlightened. That's why that one is an arahant. That one is an Arya. That one is the Buddha. But that one is not you, no? Understand? No? That's why the enlightened one, they are not gullible. That's why in the Diamond Sutta, even the Sotapan will not have a thought that that one is them. They will never arise that thought because they are not deluded anymore. They penetrated the five aggregate of form and mind and realize it's condition arising. Condition arising entity, like any phenomena supported by condition, how can it be you? It can never be a permanent, unchanging entity that you can hold on to and maintain. This is eternally me. That's why the Buddha's deep meaning of anatta is not a permanent, unchanging entity. Where within the conditioned world, everything is condition arising. There is no such thing as a permanent, unchanging entity that you can hold on to, cling on to, and say, this is me, this is I. That's why in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Buddha make it very clear. Is this physical body self? He asked the monk. The monk don't know how to reply. Then the Buddha replied, it cannot be self, isn't it? Cannot be me, understand not? Because if this is self, it will not lead to suffering, the Buddha said. Understand? No? But because it leads to suffering, that's why it is not self. Understand? No? If it is self, then it will be within our power to tell this body it has to be thus and not otherwise. Understand? No? Because it belongs to you. Understand? It's a permanent unchanging entity. But in a conditioned world, this is impossible. Everything goes the way of nature because it's condition arising, cause of phenomena. That's why when you meditate, you see it very clearly within your own form and mind. That's why you're not deluded by it. So understand, non means there is something, but it's not you. No means totally not there. That's why it's no such thing as nothing. That's why the teaching of what they call annihilation, the theory of a permanent soul and a nothingness, they are the two extremes. That's why the Buddha said, avoid the two extremes. Atta and the other name is not anatta. Atta and what? There's another word, opposite of atta. Don't know what already. That's why the Buddha introduced the center one, middle way. Anatta. Not without atta also. The other extreme is without atta, completely no self. He introduced anatta, non-self, in between. There is such a thing as a human being, is there? There is such a thing as a five-year form and mind, but they are impermanent, lead to suffering, and they are not you. Empty. Non-self. Not a permanent engineer. And that is the real teaching. But human beings cannot understand. Then they always say, Buddha said, anatta, non-self, not me. Then he say, I am born of karma, heir to karma condition. What is going on? Because you cannot understand him. When he refer to you are born, each and every living you are born of karma, heir to, it refer to the five degrees of form. And that one follow karma. That's why you are born of it. Heir to it, conditions. And this one go through karma. This one go through the nature's law. This one has to abide by nature's law. That's why this one has a duty towards the law of nature. That's why this one has to do your duty. You cannot say, oh, everything also empty, non-self, not real. Then you can simply do things. But there is such thing as a nature's law, law of karma, law of the mind, law of Dhamma, that actually develop the whole of what they call life and existence. That's why I always say they are nature's law that governs all of life and existence. And these three laws governs the form and mind, your life and your existence. That's why every time you come, you need a vehicle. So if you don't take care, you don't accord, this one that come, born of it, had to eat conditions, whatever it, will suffer. That's why all great beings, they take care of karma. They take care of the form and mind. They accord with nature's law, even though they have the wisdom of the true emptiness or the unconditioned. But because they have that wisdom and understanding, it connects to the form and mind. This form and mind not deluded. That's why this form and mind don't suffer. And this form and mind can live beautifully. That's why there is such thing as life. The Heart Sutta make it very clear. When you penetrate through emptiness, it leads to wonderful existence. 真空妙有. This is what the Buddha Dharma is all about. You have to have wisdom from the unconditioned and the conditioned world. Then only you can use this form and mind to live. Otherwise, you are one-sided. You cannot break free. That's why the teaching become like very complicated, very difficult to understand. It's because every time the Buddha talk, living beings don't understand what he meant. Yeah, he talk from both understanding. Because to him, he is the fully enlightened one. He understands both sides. But every time people interpret his word, and that is where the problem is, the interpretation, the commentary. It's just like I told Ingby just now. If that person has not realized, just like swimming, you have not experienced the flotation, then you want to teach people swimming. You go and read book, Olympic swimmer, who and who, how many gold medals they swim like that. You must swim like that. But he himself haven't gone into the pool. No? He himself don't know what flotation is. No? But he want to teach you swimming. No? Cannot. If they themselves have not realized that truth, that's why they cannot understand the teaching. They will interpret according to what they read from the text or the books or the internet. So that is not real Dhamma, born of the awakening. That's why you must have that type of understanding and wisdom. You must awaken, otherwise you cannot teach, you cannot share. Otherwise it's very dangerous. That's why it can result in a lot of karmic consequences. When you lead people, blind leading the blind, what happened? Huh? The blind himself cannot see. He tell you, you meditate like that, you know, you do this. But he himself is still blind. So he himself still haven't realized Nibbana. So he only believes you do la. One day you will become enlightened. So if you have such people around, then you are not careful, you will get yourself involved. And you get involved because in the past you also like him, and also teach, also lead people astray or go Holland, then don't know how to come back. Then this life come got condition, you meet the same type of people who take you to Holland. Because this is what you did to people, and it's so karmic. You reap what you sow. That's why when you're not sure, be honest. I only share my understanding. I'm not sure because I haven't understood or I haven't really got a clear understanding yet. But based on my understanding now, I think it's like that. Then not so bad. So there's no karmic implication. But you don't know, and yet you go and say, is this one real one? You better go. Then you promote it until it becomes so popular. Then so many people get led astray. And you know what is the coming consequence? Doing good and doing all this is the same. When you believe and have a lot of faith, then you become gullible, then you do all this. The karmic effect come back also, just like the wholesomeness, where you have a lot of faith and you do it very seriously. positive one is very positive, but wrong one, negative one, also very powerful. That's why I come back, you pay like anything. That's why don't be too eager to share and teach when you are not clear and ready. But you can share, just be honest about it, understand? Then just share whatever you understand. There is no harm in that. But do not lead people astray. Just tell people. At the moment, I only understand up to this level, so I can share with you whatever I understand. After that, you have to find out yourself. Then, no harm. Understand? Then people respect you because you have been honest and sincere. That's like Kayamita. We always call it a Dhamma sharing. Because one-sided talk is very dangerous. Early years, I was in this break field doing the recording. That's why I know, I sat at the back. And I heard a lot of very funny comments. And they have a lot of coming implications which they don't know. Because of their views and opinion, and they dare to say all those things. Then when you hear them, you know, delusion is like that. When there is delusion, they will speak like that. They will comment like that. And they are so, what they call, egoic, you know, to comment. Yeah, they take sides. They are attached to their methods and technique and their teacher. And only their one is correct. The rest is all wrong. So if you have that type of mind, you should straighten your view and have an open mind. Because it's very dangerous. Because it will lead to division, argument, negative karmic consequences. That's why I have an open mind. If you don't understand, don't comment. Then just let things be. Then if you can understand, you rejoice. Not until when you really have the understanding. Better have an open mind. Because you can never understand how penetrative people's cultivation is until you yourself can really understand. So when you don't have that clear understanding, when you are limited, try not to judge, try not to react, and make all those comments. Okay? Having an open mind is very important. You got nothing to lose there. Open mind means what? If I still don't understand, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to create unnecessary wrong speech, wrong action, and conflict or division. I just accept them for what they are. Then I say, maybe later on when I cultivate, when I understand, then I will investigate into all this. At the moment, I listen. No harm. But if you have this very rigid mindset, what happens? You will resist or no? That is like the Zen analogy. If your cup is full, what happens? Whatever tea people pour in or flow out, because you'd say you know already. Everything else is not important. So your cup is full. When your cup is full, you are not open mind. Open mind means you listen. No right, no wrong. Then everything go in. Then you investigate, you screen. You cannot understand, let things be. Because later on, when you understand, you will be very surprised. So, having an open mind is like maintaining an empty cup. Just listen. But when you are ready, you will understand. Then it becomes different. Okay, thanks for the question, Ibi. I also didn't know it was on page 21. But it's good that she read that book. That book is the most important book. If you want to understand life, that one is very penetrative. Who are you? What are you? That one, I tell you, very few people can explain it to you. That type of Dhamma is very rare in this world. While I take my Chinese tea, you all can think of your question.
Matthew.
Yes.
One more question.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
The first aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind is our physical form and the four aggregates of mind. My initial understanding is like whatever happened in the present moment, these five first aspect of physical form and mind, in the present moment, we can be aware. Whereas the second aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind is more on perception and memory, or in the mental state.
Yeah,
like the
it's the mental five aggregates of form and mind. You know why? I already explained. The mind has four aggregates. Understand now? Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. How does the form enter the mind? Two?
Perception
and memory is correct. But memory recall. Otherwise, you cannot perceive. That's why without memory, that thought cannot come out. If you see something that you haven't seen before, you don't know how to label one. You realize or not? You don't know how to label one. But if you have learned it before, then you know how to label. That's why thought is from memory. Without memory, without conditioning, you don't know how to label one. It's something very new. The unknown. So, the five aggregate of form and mind is the same. Because in the mental, it's only four aggregate. Then how does the fifth aggregate of form enters the mind? That's why, so far, I haven't seen any book that write about it. Nobody really can. Because this five aggregate of form and mind is what the Buddha meant in the dependent origination. But the book, 90% translated over the three period of time. To me, I respect them for what they are, their views, their whatever. But it cannot be this way. If it's this way to me, no meaning in it. Why does the Buddha want to teach a dependent origination that happened only once over three lifetimes? Understand? No meaning at all. It doesn't help me to cultivate. Maybe as a scientific fact, it's worthwhile. It's not practical. And the reason why they do it, I understand. They cannot explain dependent origination otherwise. But that is the only understanding. It comes from the commentaries. But what the Buddha taught actually is every moment, every instant, if you check his teaching, every moment, every instant. And the problem is, what is avijja also not understood? What is right view also not clearly understood? So it's very difficult to penetrate dependent origination. That if you cannot see your mind, the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, there is no way you can explain the dependent origination within every moment of consciousness. That's why when I did the meditation, when I silent my mind, then I realized all these external form, that's why they are also called rupa. Because within the senses, sense data, they are form. They enter the mind through perception. Then when they enter the mind, the five mental aggregate of form and mind become real. Understand now? That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, the first two link, means dependent on ignorant, what do? You arise sankhara, means what? You try to understand. You want to experience, you want to understand. That's why you think, understand now? That's why dependent on ignorance, the thinking will arise. Where to you, that is the only instrument. If I don't think, I cannot understand. That's why the teacher in the school, you don't understand, go back, think about it. Then come back and discuss. So thinking is your only tool. We have 99.9% throughout the day you use thought. So avijja paccaya sankhara. Thinking means what? You make contact with the mind. Understand? And the mind is an organ. Can you understand? The mind is an organ because it's the sixth organ. So when you make contact with the organ, what happens? Like the physics experiment, the light bulb light up. Correct not? And that is consciousness. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara is thinking. You make contact with the mind. So when you make contact, mental consciousness arise and they say avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana. Ah, this is the explanation. Then vijnana paccaya namarupang, that's the five degree of form of mind, the mental one, is where you input your content of consciousness into the consciousness. Then it becomes namarupang. So clear and so easy, but it cannot explain. You know why? They had to change the second link. They call it karmic volition. One of the English translation of sankhara is karmic volition. You know what is karmic volition? Huh? Volition is what? Intention. So they say before you die, because of ignorance, there is this karmic volition. Your last thought moment. Because of karma, understand? So this one condition rebirth consciousness, understand? Oh, to them that consciousness becomes rebirth consciousness, understand? Then when there is a rebirth consciousness, five aggregate of form and mind, the first aspect of the human being come into being, understand? That is the only thing they understand. That's why vinyanang paccaya nama rupang, this five aggregate of form and mind come into being, born already. And because of that, the sense bases all fall into place. Asana. Ah, then it make contact. Yeah. Then after that, contact, condition, feeling. Feeling, condition, craving. Craving, condition, grasping. Grasping, condition, becoming. Then birth. Ah, birth, they say you die. You take birth again. You know what is birth or not? That's why all these links, they cannot understand. So, this way is convincing, logical, understand not? Where everybody can accept, correct not? Huh? Where the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, nama rupang, everybody can accept. It's a human being born into this world. That's why coming only. That's why very popular, the commentary. But when I meditate, I realize dependent origin not like that one. Every moment, every instant it arises. Then sometimes it don't follow the whole link one. Sometimes upon contact, it's not only feeling now. The whole of consciousness and its content straight away come out now. Then I realize the seven universes, everything is inside there. Then the dependent origin is multidimensional. It's not one dimensional. Sometimes it never finish. Then you go to the next sense organ because it operates very fast. Then the thinking and the activity, they are so fast. That's why the actual dependent origination that you see inside with the silent mind is totally different from what the book interprets. That's why without that realization, you can never understand the Buddha's teaching. That's why I wrote in that book, Paticca Samuppada, which I delivered 10 years ago. It's in a transcript form. You go and read that one. That one very clear, very beautiful. 10 years ago, I already shared that one. But at that time, hardly anybody can understand. That's why I told them, I said, whoever who can understand 10% of what I share at that time, he is already a very, very exceptional cultivator. So, the whole of the teaching, you need to have realization to really understand. Otherwise, it's the blind leading the blind. You know how the teaching comes about or not? Most of them. There are a lot of scholars. Correct, not? Scholar monk and scholar cultivator, they go and take exam. Then they got degree, PhD. Not to say they are all theoretical or what. There are some who cultivate also and become very good. But the problem is, they use thought and they go and study. Then they use the thought to interpret the sutta. Then after many years, after the degree, then they start to come out and teach according to what they believe from the interpretation. Then what happens is, you use the instrument of thought to read the sutta, interpret the sutta, then come out with method and technique to teach meditation. I ask you one very simple question. What is method? What is technique? A series of instructions to do things. Nothing to do with the meditation, nothing to do with heedfulness. and you don't understand what this means, you become gullible. Because these are a series of instructions born of the thought, which is the instrument they use. And this instrument is limited by itself. Here is thought. It's thought-based. Then from this method and technique, which is thought-based interpretation, you try to realize a state that is beyond thought, which is the Dhamma. Is it possible? Huh? Like your microscope. Let's say thought. Magnification 10 times only. You want to see something maybe 100,000 times small. You can never see it. Well, you use thought. You're supposed to silence your mind and awaken. You're supposed to awaken through the silent mind, the meditative mind. But you never knew what that silent mind is because you are actively using thought to probe, to meditate. And who is the meditator? Again, the thought. The thought is actively meditating with what? With its conditioning, with its views and opinion and belief system. From the known, they are searching for truth. The problem is the truth is the unknown, beyond thought, beyond time. So how can the known understand the unknown? Impossible. That's why you continue not to investigate and come to that understanding, then you will actually miss the essential Dhamma that the Buddha teach. That's why he talked about heedfulness, mindfulness. When it comes to purification of mind, the Buddha's advice got three, right? Avoid all evil, do good. This one, thought-based. But when it comes to purification of mind, sacitta pariyotapanang etang buddhana sasana, the Buddha never used thought and effort anymore. It just says sati, mindfulness, awareness. That's why the real meditation is just sati, mindfulness, awareness, the silent mind. And that is the real meditation. And that is the one that can penetrate, because that is the right instrument. Without sati, the whole of cultivation collapse. I already explained in many of the talks. The book Emptiness, when it come out, you will have that understanding. It's written there very clearly. Then also, there's another one that Engby did the transcript. I am now in the process of finalizing it. That one will be quite fast too, because that one Engby did very well. He put all the time there, very easy. So I no need to go and listen to a recording, like where to look for it. Straight away, I go to that time. I know where I stop, then I can continue. But I have to listen again. If I don't listen again, sometimes I just correct what she write. And what she write is very good. It's very near. Most of it is there. Except for certain places, because it's not easy. Because the whole talk is very long. Certain words are missing. One or two words are missing. Then sometimes, because if you don't listen clearly, that word, the meaning run. Like there was one case, I remember. Don't know what, an inner nature. She only heard in the nature. Understand? Inner nature and in the nature. So he wrote in the nature. But actually, not in the nature, it's inner nature. Understand? So sometimes you listen, the pronunciation is there. Then I read. I said, cannot be. I never talk like that one. Then I listen to the recording. Then I realize, inner nature. When you listen, you thought it's in the nature. It's very logical one, in the nature. But you never understood that it's the inner nature. So that's why transcript sometimes you have to listen. Not to say, my talk, no need to listen, I also know. But when I read, I know this is not something that I will write like that one, or I will speak that way. Then I will listen. Then most of the time when I listen, certain word missing, and sometimes the word sound the same. Sound like me, but may not be me. uh, So these are all the possibilities that can happen. Yeah, Ingvi.
Just now, I would like to ask, it's not really a question, it's like whether correct or not my this initial understanding on second aspect of mental form and mind.
Yeah.
It's more like not happen in the present moment. It's like recalling from the past memories and through perception. Whereas the first aspect of form and mind is whatever happened in the present moment. The second aspect is more
It depends on how your mindfulness is. Because if your mindfulness is very clear, both also happen within the reality. Because the first aspect is just the human being or the living being, nothing else, understand not? It's just the form and mind. Where you have a physical body, which they call it the rupa, then there's a consciousness trapped inside. So these two combined is the five griya of form and mind. That's why the Buddha said, if you attach and cling to this, it becomes grasping aggregate. Upadana kanda, suffering will arise. But the second one, which the Buddha is more interested, is the mental five aggregate. And that one, every moment, every instant, it arises. But when it arises, it's not like what the book say. It's not linear. Understand? Upon contact, according to dependent origination, they say, contact, which is pachya vedana. Understand? Dependent on contact, feeling arise. No. Straight away upon contact, everything arise. The first two links, there is also contact where you think. Understand? Upon contact, consciousness arise, understand not? So ignorant contact, condition, ignorant content, understand not? So straight away, kusala and akusala go in the content of consciousness. That's why within the vijana, namarupang, the five mental aggregate come out, and that one is within the moment. But simultaneously, within this namarupang, which is vijana is content or consciousness, that's why chitta is vijana is content. The whole of the chitta, understand not? Consciousness and its content, which is the namarupang, the five aggregate of form and mind, which is your thought, understand not? This is the one that has the seven universal inside and all the other kusala and akusala mental states, understand not? So this is the one that you need to realize through your meditation, the understanding. That's how you can see your subtle mental intention behind, understand not? Then you know all these are conditioned by your views and opinion. Mostly it's wrong view initially. So it doesn't mean that upon contact feeling arise. Upon contact, the first link, ignorant contact, already conditioned the consciousness and its content which has delusion. That's why upon contact feeling arise, you cannot cut. Because of delusion, you will grasp and cling. That's why craving will immediately come about. That's why avijja, paccaya, sankhara, then straight away you will go to craving. So craving, you cannot cut on. Because upon contact, feeling arise, vedana, paccaya, tangha, you cannot stop. Without wisdom, you cannot stop. That's why you must develop the right view, straightening of view, wisdom, understanding. And then feeling remain as pure feeling. And then during that moment, when you have mindfulness at time, you can be at the moment of feeling. You just stay there. That's all. Cannot move. That's all. Because there is no avijja. There is no craving. There is no like and dislike. There. You just stay there. That's why dependent origination didn't carry through. And this is not cut at feeling. Because there is wisdom, no longer deluded. It cannot hold, cannot grab, cannot cling. That's why it cannot move. Understand not? You cannot be ignorant and want to cut a feeling. Means what? You suppress, don't want to have craving, another. Means don't want to get angry. But inside, it's still there at the root, another, not rooted out. Oh. Then when you see somebody say all those things, you say, ayo, yan, you suppress the feeling, you don't want to get angry. That is not dependent on origination. That is suppression of emotion and feeling. But when you have wisdom, you can accept them for what they are. You don't have to yarn in it. You can just smile and accept him for what he is. You can have love and compassion. Forgive him for he know not what he is doing. Then you can relate metta. May he be well and happy. May the blessing of the triple gem be with him. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy. Then your mind becomes very different. There is no more anger, no more trying to cut, trying to forgive. No such thing already. Well, you understand. The moment you understand, you will not do. When you understand, don't have delusion, you will not hold, understand? If you don't hold, who let go? It's the people who hold, have attachment and clinging, want to let go. I ask you one question. If you have delusion and clinging and you want to let go, how? You only verbalize, understand? I forgive you, but your sound, your tone is still anger, understand? Okay lah, never mind lah. Yeah lah, let go lah, don't want to think lah, what for, suffering. You think you let go ah? It's only word, understand? Because a person who has delusion cannot let go, understand? But the moment you understand, that's why it's immediate, sudden, cannot hold anymore. When you cannot hold, is there a need to let go? You don't need to do anything, isn't it? Because you are not deluded by it. Like this one, very hot. You have the wisdom, you touch it before. You see even the smoke coming out. Not smoke, vapor coming out. You dare to touch it. But the newborn baby or the kid, if they don't know what chili is, they don't know what hot is, you ask them to come and touch, they will touch one. But the moment they got burnt, or the chili, like my brother did it to his first son, yeah, he very naughty, everything also he want to eat. So one day, he put the chili there. And he said, come, you like to eat all this, you try this. At first, she really very innocent, when that chili went in there, cry like anything. Then he said, now you learn. He said, don't simply eat things, ask for permission. It's not suitable for you to eat, you cannot eat. Then after that, even very sweet thing you put there, he don't trust you anymore. He's scared already. He said, don't. Then he wait for mommy to come. Mommy said, this one okay, not chili. Then he eat. That's why if you learn, you have the understanding, you will never touch, understand not? Because when you understand, you can never touch. When you never touch means what? You are not holding anymore. No need to let go, understand not? So when you understand what the worldly people advise you may sound very logical, but I always tell you whatever that is logical is mundane truth. They may not be the real ultimate truth. The ultimate truth is always the opposite of what is logical. So many incidents, the truth is always the opposite of the logical thinking or perception of society. Like meditation, if you tell people no need effort, nobody to meditate, just silent, they will look at you, you're crazy. If I don't meditate, how to be enlightened? It's only logical. Then no method, no technique, how to meditate? Then they want to know what method you use. What type of meditation you did? Vipassana. You don't even mention the method, they will come. You say vipassana. But you say something else, they don't want to come. That's why they ask, is it vipassana? Because that is a popular, well-accepted word. But what is vipassana? They don't want to know. That's why you can end up very gullible. Everywhere you go looking for the word. That's why they say, jnana, jhana, everything. But the essential Dhamma, four noble truths, the one to learn. Five spiritual faculty, five hindrance, the one to understand. Three evil, the one to understand. Essential Dhamma are the basis of the Buddha's teaching. The essence of his teaching. From there, all the other teachings spin off. So if you don't have the understanding, you become gullible. Okay, anyway. So, the five aggregate of form and mind, the mental aspect, the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, can also be with the moment if you are aware. It is always there because it is the reality. What you mean is maybe it's not physical. Understand? Not something tangible. That's why to you, because it's mental. It's like you think it's recollection and all those things. No, it's that moment, that instant. Because when you're silent, you will arise on. Upon contact, that silence will know one what happened, the whole of the consciousness. Then only the content went in. But it's so fast. And because of the habitual tendency, the whole thing is already there. That's why you cannot do anything. But when you are mindful, when you have this ability to be silent until it's very stable, then throughout the day it's very different. You can, at the moment of sense experience, upon contact, it means what they call sense experience, moment of seeing, no thought on. Understand? The moment of hearing, no thought on. Then it can stay there one. That feeling at the moment of sense contact will remain as pure feeling. No movement. The normal people already gone. Depending on it, very fast. Then get angry, react. That's a mind stir already. But this one very different. It can stay there. That's why I say the awareness can be at the moment of feeling, stay there. At the moment of perception, at the moment of activity of mind, and at the moment of consciousness. It's just conscious like that. No movement. But you cannot understand until you reach that stage. It's like swimming. You don't go in until you know how to float. All these words on it, you can never understand. But the moment you experience that buoyancy and flotation, you will understand what the person is trying to share with you. So meditation is the same. Not until, that's why I say when you meditate, don't try to know. Just silent. Then the moment it comes, the form and mind will know. When sati is there, it will know. Then when it is there, it is so different, so sensitive. And it can be with the moment of sense experience. And it's like very different now. Everything is like in sati, like slow motion. That time, I still remember 20 or 30 years ago. Wow, like that one. So different. That's why the whole of the nature, the mind is very different. Then you start to witness all of the whole essential Dhamma teaching within your own form and mind. That's why you see them very clearly. The Dhamma is within life, not apart from life. Every moment of consciousness, every moment of sense experience, the Dhamma is there. That is why it is called Dhamma, living Dhamma. not knowledge. Knowledge is recall through memory, thought. Okay? We better end. 2:30 already. Otherwise, some of you may have to go back and do your chores and your duty. So we will do the sharing of merits and transfer merits. So once again, we would like to thank Brother Sia, Sister Nancy and family, and all Kayamitas who has gathered here today to actually make this monthly house dana a great success. We rejoice together. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then now we shall recall to mind all this wholesomeness and rejoicing, so that we can invoke the power of all these merits. And we will share all these merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Then after that, we will invoke power of what they call merits, to help in the blessing for our nation. Then you can make your own aspiration too after that. Then we also wish to radiate love and metta to all beings within this vicinity of this house and this whole of clan. May all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, all to be well, all happy and peaceful. May they all to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. may their mind states too be without any physical and mental suffering, without any anger, hatred, delusion. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Okay, now we shall transfer merit and share merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana ittavata cha ammehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati heto cha vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko ibmina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Can pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kanyin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones.